The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is the abbot of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org/zcnyc. Thanks for listening.
Good morning again. So the theme for this 90-day training period that we're in is called Going Straight on an Ever-Twisting Path. How do we go straight on an ever-twisting path? That's the practice of the bodhisattva, the one who is in the world to realize one's true nature and stay in the world and benefit all living beings. It's also the practice of developing the paramitas, which are our very virtuous qualities. Generosity, our morality, our patience, our joyful effort, meditation, and the wisdom, developing the wisdom of emptiness of all conditions. So these are who we are already. And yet they need to be developed. We're bodhisattvas, Buddhas in training, becoming Buddhas, shall we say. So Fusatsu, can I help you? Okay. Fusatsu is a renewal of vow ceremony, which translates as continuous good practice. She's in the back. She'll join you later. So, Fusatsu is continuous good practice to stop unwholesome action, which we call karma. And so this ceremony aligns with the path of a Buddha. So it's a rededication to aligning ourselves with our own undefiled an unperturbed nature, our original nature, realigning ourselves with that. And of course, we need to be recognizing how we're twisted, how we're not in harmony. So whenever two or more people gather together, the Buddha said, that's a sangha. So if you have another person to sit with, you're sangha. So it just takes two to create a sangha. And collectively, a sangha is called the virtue of harmony. And this is the virtue of harmony that is present. And this is a particular sangha gathering, right? We have different sanghas that we're part of. Family, work, friends, all practicing something different. But when we come into a Sangha treasure gathering, we acknowledge the arising of this inspiration and aspiration for awakening, to wake up, to come out of the darkness of our ignorance. That's probably why you came today, perhaps. Like, something is happening. What is happening? And we start to look. Is this all there is? I'd like to see what's real and true to be of benefit. Yet when such a gathering occurs, we know there's us, people. And along with people comes the whole world, all of our humanity, all of our human existence. It's ever present. Our desires, our concerns, our fears, our doubts, our competitiveness, our ambition, our talents, our past memories, all the things that we experience as humans comes right into this present moment with all of us gathered. What rich human soil right here. And because of this coming together of humanity and human existence, we got problems. Problems arise as we interact with one another. Difficulties, bumping. Mizumi Roshi used to say, we're like a big rock tumbler, and we all have these sharp edges, and so we come together as Sangha so we can tumble together and smooth out our edges. If you've had a rock tumbler, they're very cool. So, yeah, we come together, and sometimes people are hurt. Sometimes intentionally, often unintentionally. And because of this, and so this question of how do we restore and develop and maintain and deepen harmony, this virtue of harmony, how do we do that together? How do we do that individually and in our individual lives as well? When it's broken, both in our personal life and with our many relationships and in this collective Sangha, treasure. And this was a concern since the time of the Buddha, right? So Fusatsu is Buddha's response to this acknowledgement of how we are with one another and how we help each other and harm each other. And so the roots of this liturgy began in the time of the Buddha, 2,500 years ago, in a different form. Mostly Buddha had monastics in the community that Buddha was speaking to. But some of the ingredients are the same. It was done on the full moon. I think we passed that, but we're close. The purpose is the same, though. And, of course, those of you in the Jewish community, I think this is Elul, the month of atonement that comes just before the high holidays. So this harvesting time is like that. And so we can be at one with our virtuous qualities and begin, we can do that by beginning to acknowledge where we've gotten twisted. Where's the twist? And in our actions. And so we recite very first thing after making prostrations and incense offerings, this gatha of atonement. So that's what I'd like to speak more on today, this gatha of atonement at 1 minute. We bring to mind clearly what is here, whatever situation presents itself as our experience, what we call our life, whatever we encounter, and we see all of it as the Buddha Dharma, as the path, which means we have accepted everything as this very life. No matter what has been in our experience, happened to us, it's all concluded in this very life. So we can't leave anything out, though sometimes we'd like to. And in a sense, this atonement is returning to our natural state, a naturalness. How do we be natural? So this namu is be one with, to be one with. We had a cat that lived at the temple whose name was Namu. And when she was growing up, she was wicked. She would just attack your legs while you were walking by, or you'd sit on the couch and then a claw would come out. And my friend had her and said, look, if you don't shape up, you can't keep biting and attacking everyone. I may not be able to keep you. And so she was preparing for Fusatsu, and she was singing Namu. And she said, the cat totally relaxed. And she says, you're Namu. You're Namu, at one with your craziness. So Namu is to be one with. Namu lived for 18 years. It was a tuxedo cat, so I always thought it was kind of like a monk that didn't like have past life as a monk because it had white V-neck and the black robes. Very cute. So we can also think of this as the gatha of non-separation. At one means not separate from. It's another way to phrase it. As long as we function from a deep-seated belief in a self as fixed and solid, we're subject to the laws of karma. We bind what is not bound. It takes someone to bind us, right? We bind ourselves with our thoughts about ourselves, about others. So it starts off, we chanted, all evil karma ever committed by me since of old, on account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance, born of my body, mouth, and thought, now I atone for it all. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old, all separation committed by me, so we can each go inside and feel that, all the separation ever committed by me since of old, acknowledging where separation has been committed by me. It's very personal. The separation can be between ourself and another, between ourself and ourself, which is very prominent. Our separation from the earth, our separation from anything. We have to acknowledge that. So, the emphasis in this first line is recognizing there is harmful karma, evil karma, injury, harmful actions upon ourselves and each other. And we're taking that separation, that harmful karma, and we're bringing it to at one again. So, you know, you get down and we're doing gassho, right? So, two hands. And so that's the mudra we're making to chant this with that very line, bringing it as one again. Then, can I really see it as an expression of my life? You the same, personally. How can I take responsibility? How can I work with it? So we're not hedging around here. It's personal responsibility committed by me. Committed by me. Each of us, as we chant that, the attention is without question within ourself on that line. And we hear the phrase, take responsibility. See all that comes to us as our own life. My teacher used to say, what we do and what happens to us are the same thing. And I know sometimes for me that word responsibility can feel heavy, in particular, in this particular regard. And Mizumi Roshi often used a phrase which was, let us appreciate. So that's another way of saying, let us take responsibility. Let us appreciate. Let us appreciate we have a response ability to the actions that we've taken. How can I appreciate my life as Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, the three treasures? How can I appreciate my body as this great earth? How can I be responsible that this body is the body of the earth? So this is really a fundamental challenge in Buddhist practice, a big shift, a revolution of mind into taking up our life and not just like we're a leaf blown around, like whatever happens, whatever, we don't really reflect on what we do. But we take it up as one who is creating our life moment to moment, simply and realistically. committed by me since of old. That's all. The word karma, we hear that a lot. We see it on tea bags, even cereal boxes I've seen it on. But it means action. It means action. A simple way of describing it is cause and effect. This being that becomes, that being this becomes. For every cause, there's an effect. And that effect becomes the next cause. And it creates an effect. And that effect becomes the next cause. And on and on. Right? That's how karma works. It has a propensity. And the main thing about karma is the relationship between what we choose to do and then what we make of ourselves. How we shape ourselves. And how we're shaped by ourselves through thought, speech, and action each moment. By intention. What are we intending? That's a big part of it. What's our intention? That's what's going to initiate an action. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. This is a really important phrase. I mean, they all are. I mean, the whole thing is. Because it takes away some moment in which our greed, anger, and ignorance began. It's beginningless. On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. We can't say, oh, I became greedy at this point. Do we really know where it began? Where we began to get angry? Where we began to get greedy? Where we began to be ignorant? It's beginningless. Throughout time and space, it's unfathomable, really. So these are called the three poisons. Greed, anger, and delusion. It's at the center of samsara, of the wheel of confusion, of suffering. Three poisons are the way in which we manifest our separation from ourselves. Greed, anger, and delusion, or ignorance. We don't have to find specifics. We don't have to pin it down. But we want to. Don't you want to pin it down? The why? Like, I wrote, it's because my mother told me I could have whatever dolls I wanted that I became greedy, angry. We don't have to figure it out. It's beginningless. These are the three traditional root poisons. Which poisons are clarity of vision, our wisdom, keeping us from being able to see things as they truly are, and keeping us from manifesting ourselves as we truly are. Being greedy, being angry, being ignorant takes us in a different direction. And personally, I find it easier to speak with someone when I'm honest with myself and I see in myself, I'm greedy. I have anger and I'm ignorant. And I don't have to like make that like, you know, a position, but I need to acknowledge that's in me. It's easier to talk to someone. And then I don't separate when I experience that. They're just the same. So we can meet without separation. You too are like this. How can we each appreciate our greed, anger, and ignorance? Usually we don't take those as something to be appreciated. But if it's all Buddha Dharma, if it's all part of our path, then why not take it all in? Like our wisdom is working. We're being shown our greed, anger, and ignorance. That's so great. That's what we're asking for, in a sense. So to appreciate it, so we can move the dial, move towards wholesome practice. Practice it. Strengthen our virtues. Weaken greed, anger, and delusion. Born of my body, speech, and mind. Now I atone for it all. So this points to where karma is born. Our body, ways we move our body around and do that with other people. Definitely from our mouth. That's fast. You can be doing really well and then you say one thing and it's like, oh my God, right? Born of our body, mouth, and think, thought. We usually don't think that. So even if we're thinking badly about someone, I'd like to do this, they should, that goes out. It's already waving through. That already is producing karma, that thought. But that we think, that's not, nobody sees that. We feel it. We feel it. It's not hidden. Nothing's hidden, actually. So consciousness is very important because it is the seed, the root of body, speech, of action, and thought. Intention. Intention. So we take all of it, include not just a little bit of our separation, but all of our separation from beginningless beginning. What we know about and what we don't know about. So, if you notice, all of the verses have this quality of taking it all in. There's no easy out. We don't get to escape and say, oh, well, you know, I'm just going to account for this separation this year and last week's separation. I kind of, you know, I just did this particular thing, blah, blah, blah. No, all of it. Each time we atone for all of it. Just in case you let anything slip under the rug, we don't get to sneak around the corner. I'm going to just do my little part. No, it's all of it. At this very moment, not only we are attaining for our own separation, atoning for it, but for the separation that is ever, all the separation that has ever happened. Can you imagine that? That's how largely connected we are. That when we atone for our separation, that is also atoning for the separation everywhere, in everything that ever happened. If it's happened through us, it's happened through everyone. That's how related we are. That's how it works. So in the Mahayana, which is the school, a school of Buddhism, where the Bodhisattva path really got strong, that one wasn't doing this sort of individual practice just for their own enlightenment, and then I'll go to my cave or, you know, sit in the forest or just not interact. The Mahayana was that this path of final enlightenment is actually held off, truly held off, until all beings are awakened as well. We don't depart. There's deep teachings and understanding about why this has to happen. Because really, where is enlightenment? Where is the satisfaction if there are other beings suffering? For real, how can I go to a space of bliss and no longer consider the plight of others? It's unheard of. Many people, I don't need to tell you, don't have anything to eat, don't have fresh water. There's a magnitude of people of every race and color, shape and form being harmed and killed for their embodiment. Not just by action, but from inaction. Our earth is suffering and all its inhabitants are suffering because we can't accept our embodiment. We're here seeing the harmful, self-centered mind seeds and what this creates. That's what we're seeing. We're seeing those mind seeds in full bloom. Full bloom. All connected. These are all our relatives. Everyone is our relatives. There's no other. Where is there ever a place that is removed? So it is about aspiration. I talked about this yesterday. The deep intention that our life is a life of service. In whatever way, we have to see what, some of us it's big service. Some of us it's very small and very quiet. But it's giving. It's a life of service given over to this deep intention, this heartfulness that says, I'm practicing so that I can be the best person, the best human being that I can possibly be, so that I can truly be of service, that I can truly be available. And this isn't like, you know, it's not, as I'll use Trungpa's term, idiot compassion, like that kind of like just, you just give. It's appropriate, an appropriate response, right? So it's not just you're a rug. So we can misinterpret that, right? If service in service means being truly myself, that you're truly yourself, that we come to the place where we have deep knowing of ourselves, and no matter what we do, we are manifesting deep wisdom. So it's based on understanding wisdom as best we can, no matter what our life path is, no matter which way we show up in the world. If we are committed to knowing ourselves deeply, then that in itself is a manifestation of service to all beings. If that's your commitment, that's a service. So that's where this practice doesn't become selfish. If that's our aspiration, our intention, you knowing yourself deeply is an act of service. We take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, because without the Sangha, we have no clue. Without people, we have no clue what we're doing. We can go off on this quiet retreat, and we come back, and somebody was taking care of our house, and they were supposed to pay a bill, and they didn't, and we flip. What were we doing in that cabin? So people make us real. We see where we have to do some work, right? Yeah. So we, without the Sangha to rub up against, we don't know where we're at. And that could be your family members. Aren't they good for us? The best. Without committing some kind of separation, we don't know what our practice is. That's how we find out. It isn't trying to figure out how to not commit any separation. It's to live the experience of separation and live it fully and let it burden us, because that means something's working. We feel it. We feel our morality working. We feel it hurts. We don't want to do that. That's good. That burden is good. And then we can atone and learn from it. So the Gatha of Atonement is first, come into relationship with the truth of what happened. Allow what it is in our past to be trusted as a teaching space that can move us forward. We don't want to cling to the past and drag it with us, but we do want to learn to trust it. We want to learn from what has already happened. And the only way we can learn from it is to be one with it. Yes, this happened. Yes, this happened. In atonement, there's an effort to say we're not going to pretend that this hasn't happened. This is not easy. It doesn't happen just because we did fusatsu once. It has to happen over and over and over again. It's deep work. Yes, this is true. And then we could say, now I atone for it all. I am at one with it now. No need to have the sense of something dragging behind. It happened. Yes. It just becomes part of the fullness of who we are. And we use that to be in service. We use every ounce of our suffering. That's why we're good to meet someone, because we know and we're offering it. It's serving. It's service. It's all brought to bear. And then we can trust ourselves. We can trust ourselves in that. In the Gatha of Atonement, we take in every single bit of it, leaving nothing outside, right into the center of our being, beginningless, atoning for all of it. And then we may begin to realize this gate of creation is actually the gate of cessation. It's the same gate. We create it, we can uncreate it. And then we can reclaim more cleanly our virtuous, life-giving qualities. Our Buddha nature is always functioning. And that's why right after we do the Gatha of Atonement, we go right into that beautiful Namu, be one with, and then there's these bodhisattvas that are you. So nothing's outside in the Zen liturgy. You are the compassionate Buddha Avalokiteshvara. I am Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of wisdom. The Buddha, the past Buddhas, we chanted all their names. Be one with. Now that we acknowledged and atoned, we can be one with these qualities more clearly and cleanly. And from this place, restate our intention. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to save them. From there, we can restate how we want to direct ourselves. And as we complete the last part, we'll take refuge in the three treasures, the Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha. It's interesting because we're saying the same words, but it's a different practice for each of us. It's not the same practice. There's something incredibly shared here, beautifully shared, but our grief and what we're holding and what we're carrying, what we bring to the cushion every time is different for each of us. But we can share that. What ignites our spirit in a chant is very different. And it's each of our responsibility to find what is it in the Dharma that speaks to us. What draws us forth? What draws you forth? What when you hear it, this just goes like, oh, you get that like, oh my God, what did I just hear? Or you're crying and you just don't know why. Like, you just don't know why you're crying. I used to come out of my teacher's talks or hearing a chant and I don't even know what I heard. Part of me knows, but not, I don't know it. But I know it. So what is it calls you to awakening? And then please, make use of it. Make use of it. Serve it to yourself, to this world. So the Gatha of Atonement is as powerful now as it was 2,500 years ago when it was brought forth as an integral part of Buddha Dharma. And fortunately, the force's karma is just as strong in the positive direction. Happiness generates further happiness for ourselves and others. Actions of kindness create greater conditions for goodness to develop. I remember early in my practice, I think Shugan gave a talk. I tried to find it. I got part of it. He said, the Gatha of Atonement could be recast as the Gatha of Appreciation. All beneficial karma ever created by me on account of my beginningless generosity, compassion, and wisdom, born of my body, mouth, and thought, now I dedicate that to each and every body. Why don't we start there? Like, why do we go all evil karma? because that's the part we want to push under the rug and don't want to look at. And we can't move forward if we're dragging that painful past. So then we can see, we can arrive at gatha of appreciation, that we can face this, and we can then offer our generosity, our goodness, let it develop. Something this large has to be given away, has to be given in a dedicated way. We can't hold on to it. All the beneficial karma that allowed us to be here today and allows us to continue to practice. If this is your first time, who knows what moved you to come? Honor that. Honor that. You might not come again. That's okay. But you did show up. Sometimes you think, oh, my friend dragged me here. Yeah, right. I had somebody sign me up for my first retreat at the monastery. I didn't want to go at all. I was like, what? You sign me up for what? And they're not sitting up here. I am. And I had so much resistance. But I went. And then I remember a conversion happened that first day. I heard the Dharma and like something turned that I can't even say what. And I couldn't go back to what, I was not the same person. I couldn't go back to what I thought I knew. It was already going. And probably beginninglessly before that, I was just resisting it, putting it other places. So, all of this beneficial karma, as well as all of the negative karma, that calls us to transform to wisdom as we develop in dropping off, letting go, seeing the emptiness as it illuminates and frees compassion for bodhisattvas, for the bodhisattva. All of it is really dignified activity, all of the activity. While atonement doesn't erase responsibility for the consequences of our actions, it cleanses the heart and allows us to return to the land of the living more unburdened, humbly, willing to transform habitual patterns based in greed, hate, and delusion to generosity, love, and clarity. And part of the ceremony bowing so much is, what do you feel like when you bow? Like, what's that like to go to the down on the earth, not see anyone? Just leave it at that. With all the pain and the difficulty that practice brings forth and brings into our consciousness, truly the only way to live is to come into this place in which we receive our whole lives, our whole selves, and become one with it and enjoy it.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.